You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast, the number one source for hunting and fishing information, strategy and tactics, as well as conversations surrounding conservation efforts and other outdoor activities in the great state of Iowa. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and this episode of the Iowa Sportsman Podcast starts right now. Three, two, one. All right. Once again on the podcast today, Mr. Tom Peplinski. How you doing, man?
Real good. How you been, Dan?
I can't complain. I tell you what, I'm glad that cold spell is somewhat over. It warmed up a little bit there after that big cold spell, and it now looks like it's going to start cooling down just a little bit, but not near as cold as the last, I guess, cold front that came through.
Yeah, and most of the snow was gone.
Yeah, which isn't bad, because I think certain parts of the state really needed that precipitation.
Yeah, down in southern Iowa, we sure didn't need any more precipitation or rain, but we're still getting it. So
yeah, because this summer was a dry summer down there, wasn't it?
Well, it was borderline drought. I mean, it was pretty bad, and then when it just started to rain, I would say mid-August, it just didn't quit. It just kept raining all fall.
Yeah, yeah, I noticed that. So you guys feel like you recovered from that drought then? You got the moisture you needed?
Well, definitely on the surface, there's too much. I guess I don't really know what the subsurface moisture levels are when you get down in there, but I know farmers are going to have a hard time this spring getting in unless it gets an early spring and some sun and stuff, but it's wet. Still wet down here.
The old groundhog said that we're going to have an early spring, so we just might get it.
Okay, that sounds good.
So, man, what's up? How did you end your season?
Well, I think the last time we talked, I was telling you I had probably the best season I've ever had as far as being on deer,
right,
and seeing big bucks and stuff like that. And I held off shooting a lot of bucks that normally I would have shot because my daughter had a late muzzleloader season.
That's right.
A tag. And she had a really good hunt. She missed the buck that I would have been doing cartwheels for her to get a shot at. It was a really, really big 10-pointer, and she just clean missed it one night, and that was probably more my fault than anything. And then a few nights later, she got a really nice mature 9-point buck. So I was really happy for her because that was her first opportunity at it.
Nice.
You could mount a little bit nicer buck. So that was a really fun hunt. And then she went home and back to school. So
yeah,
that was definitely a good way to end the season.
That's awesome. Well, at least she put the hammer down on one and got one. And I know as a father, you were probably pretty jacked about that.
Well, I was. I was probably more excited than she even knows. And when she missed that first buck, she wanted to be done. She wanted to quit. She didn't want to go anymore. And I think we've probably all been there.
Yeah.
But I kind of coached her through that level of, getting on yourself and stuff. And I'm not just saying this because it's my daughter, but I think I pressured her into taking a shot a little bit sooner because she just doesn't have the experience in a blind with a gun. And, you know, when I'm pressuring her to, you know, there's your shot and there's does that already started to have us busted and stuff. For me, that shot was probably easier because I've been in the situation before, but I think I hurried her along a little too fast. But once I basically convinced her that everything's okay, you're a good shot, it's fine, and she got back at it, we still had a couple, 2-3 days. And the last night before she had to go back to school, that buck came out and she got it. So it's actually a buck we saw earlier in the hunt, and she couldn't get a shot at it because it was too far away. So it all worked out really good. and my son was in the blind with us. And it was just fun. Those late season hunts on them blinds when you could put two or three people in a blind and it's kind of like a family, you know, get together. Those hunts I'll cherish forever. You just Absolutely. Don't forget those kind of hunts.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to those days where, whether it's a turkey blind or, you know, hell, even if it's just fishing with my kids, I'm really looking forward to the time when I can get out there and like enjoy it. And when I mean enjoy it, I mean enjoy it from a standpoint where I'm not worried about them falling in the lake or, you know, like running all over poison ivy or, you know, like their listening skills have improved, I guess you'd say.
it gets better. It gets better once the teens and then, you know, my daughter's 19 now and stuff. So it's fun. It really is fun when they're, you know, adults or later teens and you can really start enjoying the outdoors. And not that you can't when they're younger, but when they can start doing some stuff on their own and they understand things a little better, it really starts to get enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least that's been my experience.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Now here's the transition, right? The transition into today's topic. And that is one thing that I feel I'll be able to do with my kids here once it warms up a little bit is get them out on some walks and maybe start doing some shed hunting with them, because myself, I am a shed hunting nut. Like I love it just as much. I feel confident saying this. I love it just as much as actually hunting.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what it is about shed hunting, but I just love going and looking for the antlers once they start to drop. And
that's fanatic status.
I know, right? I mean, when I was younger and I didn't have kids, I remember going out multiple days in a row, from sun up till sundown and just walking and walking and walking. And that was like, you know, over 10 years ago when you, I hate to say it, but you didn't have to worry about, you know, I remember walking and I ran into a farmer. I never asked him for permission to be on his property, which I don't recommend, but he saw me. He's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" "Oh, I'm looking for shed antlers." "Okay, well, hey, go check over there." Today, you can't get away with any of that, right? So, you know, things have changed a little bit, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but still all the same, man, I absolutely love shed hunting. And I think it's just because the winter, right? It just piles up on you. And then that it starts to break. The warmer weather comes up, the snow starts to melt, and it gives you a reason to get outside.
Exactly. I'm a 365 day a year hunter, and I love the habitat and all that. And this is the time of year where it's too early for any like plantings or food plots. So, you know, you can do some stand maintenance. You can do some scouting, but this is for a year round deer hunter, the shed hunting is the natural transition from the lull you have on the last day of hunting season, because you know, you got to wait months and months again to get back in a stand to the next step, which, you know, is some food plots and that. So it's a nice transition.
Absolutely.
And it's a good reason to get out, and you can do it with family members. You can make noise. There's no pressure. It's really an enjoyable way to get out and continue the season.
Yeah. How long have you been shed hunting? Or, I mean, is this something that you've always kind of done, or is it something that you've picked up in recent years, or I don't know.
Well, I will say this. I've always shed hunted, but I've never found sheds until we started. When I say we, you know, my son and I, hunting companions, until we started getting on some properties that just had more nicer deer and more bucks. When I was a kid, I used to shed hunt. I never found a shed.
Yeah.
You know, I would go all season and never find a shed, or if I would, it'd be like a half of a 3-pointer or something.
Right.
And it was more luck than anything. Not that it's not luck now, but the chances of finding a shed when I was in my teens was slim to none. But now with quality deer management being more prevalent and the fact that I own a couple farms in South Iowa and stuff, the anticipation is higher and shed hunting is more enjoyable because the reality of finding some is just a lot greater.
Yeah, absolutely. So What have you changed over the years as far as, I guess, if there was a strategy to shed hunting, what would you say that strategy is?
Well, for me, it's the easiest sheds I find are on food sources, probably starting around this time of year. I don't necessarily do a lot of shed hunting earlier than this. Actually, I probably wait till March usually.
Yeah.
Just because I used to run cameras all year round, and now I just don't do that because I've lost some cameras in wintertime. But it's every year I'm getting pictures of bucks.
Yeah.
With full racks in March and some even into April. And I know that sounds like I'm pulling people's legs, but I'm getting a lot of bucks with racks in April. So I don't want to waste a lot of time shed hunting when, you know, half the bucks might still have their antlers on. But if you can get up a good, along a good food source, beans or corn, or even some brassicas, or anywhere the deer are kind of congregating in the wintertime. So it doesn't even have to be standing crops, but if the deer kind of congregated because there was some snow or something like that, and you can find a food source, just start walking those main trails from the food source back to bedding.
Yep.
And then just repeat, you know,
yep,
food to bed and then bed to food and food to bed and just walk those main trails.
Yep.
And in years where you don't get a lot of snow, they are really hard to find because they're really spread out. And they, you know, just as much as anybody, that a shed antler in the spring with all the dead vegetation and everything is harder than what it sounds like to pick out.
Right. And I was kind of happy that we had that big snow come through, because what that does is it flattens all the grass. So if you are walking like a field edge, or you're walking a buffer strip or erosion strip, or even in the timber, that everything's pressed down flat. So it's easier to find a shed antler after there's a heavy snow and then it melts away. So it may have came too early, but, you know, regardless, I think there's still sheds out there to find.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting you point that out, because I guess I never thought of that, but that would definitely be true, because otherwise in that tall grass, like if you're hunting Reed's Canary, if there's like some lowland Reed's Canary grass around, yep, or something,
yep,
if the wind can't knock that down, or even some of the lighter, I don't know what you call them, I would call like lighter strains of the CRP grasses,
yeah,
they're going to be standing unless you get some wet, heavy snow. So that's a good point. I never even thought of that.
Yeah.
But that's definitely, that definitely would be true.
Yeah. I remember last March, somewhere around March 10th, me and my wife went out, and we were with a group of people and we were doing some shed hunting, but my walking partner that day was my wife. And so we were walking these buffer strips that kind of fingered up into a cornfield, and they stuck out like a sore thumb. And it was one of those things where you could put someone who had never found a shed antler in their entire life. You know, there's some people out there who say they're, you know, I'm a self-admitted poor shed hunter. I can't ever find them, man. If you miss these, you should just quit, because you'll never find them. I mean, they were sticking right out.
That's probably me. I'm not kidding you, because I'm like the dog that sees the squirrel.
Yeah.
So when I'm shed hunting, I go out with I'll go out with my son or my buddies, and we'll be like, okay, let's take this draw, and we're gonna split up, and it's like a deer drive, you know, we're gonna take this draw down. And 30 seconds into it, I'm looking at a rub and a scrape, and where does this trail crotch,
yes,
across the ditch? And
yes,
I'm like the bird with the squirrel, because as soon as I start seeing buck sign and stuff, I'm not looking for sheds anymore. I forget that I'm out looking for sheds.
Right. Right. So, that's one thing that I actually had to do, train myself to keep focus down, because as I start walking through a piece of property, my mind instantly starts thinking about, where should I hang a tree stand? Right. Oh, there's a buck rub. I'm in a pinch point. You know, oh, there's a south wind. Okay, here's a north wind tree, or a west wind tree, or a southwest wind. You know, like my mind starts going to strategy. And then, you know, over the years, I would start, you know, having to tell myself, okay, this is not necessarily yes, it can be a scouting mission. You can do both, but your focus is on sheds. So keep your head down. And I feel you can do both, but I had to train myself to keep looking down on the floor. So,
Yeah, I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. Anybody that has ever shed hunted with me knows that you can walk right behind where I've gone, and there's still a chance you can find a shed, just because I'm scouting when I'm shed hunting. I just can't help it, and I guess I haven't even tried to train myself because I love scouting so much, and my properties, I don't scout them. You know, in the summer or in the fall or during hunting season, there's parts of my properties I just don't walk, and I just don't want to be bumbling around and stuff and leaving my scent behind. I stay out of them. So this is the one time of year I use the excuse for let's go shed hunting in there. But once I'm in there, I'm too preoccupied with other things. I'll still find an occasional shed or two, but I'm definitely not the best at it.
Right. So let me ask you this. Are you still running trail cameras on your properties that you own?
I have one camera out, and it's only because it was on a food source where my daughter Lily had that late muzzleloader hunt.
Gotcha.
And I just haven't pulled it yet. But normally the answer would be no, they're gone. And it's only because I've lost cameras. I've lost them to water. I don't know if it's the freezing and the thawing and then snow getting on them. And I don't want to be having to buy new cameras.
Yeah.
Because I actually think there's some decent information you can get January, February. If nothing else, just having the camera scout for what bucks made it through and stuff. But I lost too many cameras. So normally they're pulled by now.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you this, based off of previous year's intelligence, when do you feel that deer, I would say the majority of deer, start losing their antlers?
I would say the majority of the deer start losing right around now. So like right on our phone call here, majority of the deer, early February. But, well, I'll tell you what, there's still a lot that are holding on until the end of February and then are dropping in March.
Yeah.
And I've seen them drop early in around Christmas time, but that's a rarity because guys are always concerned. You always hear guys shooting bucks during that late muzzleloader and they grab the antler and it falls off. And I know what happens, but I think those are the stories that everybody hears about the story, but I think those are rare instances. I've never experienced that, but that's why I kind of hold off until March, because it's like, well, if 80-90% of them are shed by early March and the weather's starting to get nice and it's not greening up and it's still cool enough where you can walk all day, that's the time really to get out there and be the most efficient at it. I don't know what your opinions are.
Yeah, I tell you what, last year I had a killer day where I went out and I found 9 sheds, and that's high for me, 9 sheds in about 2 hours, right? And that's, for me, that's pretty good. I think I averaged out all the shed antlers, because a while ago I kept all my shed antlers. I'd say up till two or three years ago, I kept every single shed antler I found, from, the biggest ones all the way down to the spikes that I would find. And the smaller ones would go into I guess you would say this big garbage bin that I had, and it was just full of sheds. And then over time, if people needed something for crafts or something, or my wife decided to use something, I'd give them away. But I did the math, and it was a rough estimate, but I did the math, and I think for every shed antler that I found, I did roughly 9 hours of walking looking for that. So that's a lot of walking just to find a certain amount of, to find these bones. A lot of time was invested in that.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. So that's crazy.
I never would have guessed that.
Yeah. So 9 hours per shed antler, like the last weekend in February last year is when I found all those 9, right, in 2 hours. Right. But over the years, there would be days where I would walk an entire day and not find a shed antler, like 12 hours, if not 10 to 12 hours. I'd walk up from sun up to sundown looking for shed antlers and not find one, right? So you take all those days, average them out with the days where I find 9 or 5 or whatever. And, it's up there.
So if three of your friends went out, or you and your bride and two of your friends, and you went for an entire day based on that math, you're going to find four sheds.
Yeah.
And that would be an average day.
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that. No, it was one shed for every 9 hours of walking.
Yeah. So if it's four guys for an entire day, that's four.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You know, but that'd be like four sheds. And I would have thought it would have been higher than that.
Yeah. So, and it, like you said, it's so much dependent on the food, right? So this place that I went last year, the last weekend in February, where I found all those, the crop rotation was in corn. And as we all know, deer love corn, especially when the temps get cold and there's snow on the ground. And if there's a really crappy combine, that's combining the field, and they flock to that, right? This year it's going to be a little different. It's in the field is in beans, and that doesn't produce as many sheds. I feel like they go somewhere else for their food, to, you know, a specific cornfield or whatnot. And I might have to knock on door to get permission to go walk that. But in the past, if the field is in beans that fall, then shed hunting won't be near as good.
I leased a pretty nice sized farm in Wisconsin about, and I'm just guessing here, 10 years ago, maybe it's been 15 now, I don't know. And for whatever reason, it's exactly what you're talking about. There was a bluff top field of corn, and the farmer never got it off. And there was a lot of snow that year. And the farmer that we leased from, it wasn't his corn, but he would walk up that bluff and around that cornfield every day, that just for exercise. But then he was doing it for shed hunting, and he found something like 30 sheds that winter.
Wow.
It was just insane. And he was finding two or three a day, and then he wouldn't find anything for two or three days. And then he would find a couple more. And it was insane. And that's all he was doing was walking the edge of the cornfield.
Right.
He wasn't even going in the woods or nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's definitely something to say. If you could get some snow or cold, and then that food source, if they're all congregated around that food source, well, that's where the sheds are going to be. And that's how I look for them every year. I look around our food sources first, and then I use the excuse that I'm shed hunting to check out all the bedding areas and stuff. But the majority of the sheds that we always find are around food sources. Would you agree with that? Or do you ever keep track of that?
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Most of them are, like I said, that last day in February, or the last weekend in February last year, when I found all those nine, and they didn't look too sun bleached. So I would say they, all nine of them dropped within a 10 day period where they dropped. But also we went on the 10th of March when I was with my wife and another group of people, and we found in that there was one buffer strip or no, one, two, three, four buffer strips that we walked that had like 10 sheds in them. So, and they looked somewhat fresh as well. So, I wish I could sit here and say, well, hey, this deer herd's going to drop the sheds the last week of February or the first week in March, when hell, just like you said, man, I've seen deer turkey hunting with hardhorn antlers, and that's 12 to 15 days into April.
Yeah. I've seen them on my cameras in April. So, you know, if you have limited time or maybe you even have to take time off or something like that, I would say later is better, you know, because you just don't want to be spending time in January looking for sheds when 75% of the deer still got antlers. Yep. So, yep. But you know, I'm probably going to be doing a little more shed hunting this year because I'll have more time, and it'll give me an excuse to get out and get some exercise, which we all need exercise. And it's just, boy, for me, shed hunting was always an excuse to get out and do scouting. So now maybe I can get some scouting in and then actually find some sheds because I can get my scouting in and then concentrate a little bit more on finding sheds.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, if I was going to take a day off of work to go shed hunting, I would still probably go towards the end of that first week in March, because if you try to plan in advance and say, well, I'm going to go late February, I mean, we know how this Iowa weather is, right? It could snow 8 inches or it could be warm. So I really like that average temperature to get up so that all of the snow is melted they stick out better at that point in time. And at the same time, I want to be able to walk in the timber before and check for sheds before the squirrels or the varmints start chewing them up. So I would probably go with somewhere in that first week in March, but also like, I think I'm going to go shed hunting this weekend, to be honest with you.
So you've seen where the squirrels and stuff will chew them up actually pretty good. So I haven't really seen that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I got, I have a shed that I think went to a buck that I missed 2 years ago. I found his shed last year and he's got about an inch or two of his G2 chewed down. And I find sheds all the time that are chewed up and have, squirrel or possum marks on them, or, I think certain birds chew on them too. Mice will chew on them. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I've seen them chewed up, but I guess that's a rarity. Yeah. I don't, it happens, but I don't necessarily know that I'd be concerned about it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's more, I would say those finds are more in the timber.
Okay.
Where all those, more of those varmints live, like, where I guess in the buffer strips, right? You may have some mice live in the grass, but squirrels aren't out there, jumping around, maybe a possum will walk through, but there's just less animals that would chew on an antler like that. Sometimes a coyote might pick it up and, just kind of lick the wax ring around the bottom of the antler off. But, I tend to find whole sheds that don't have as much chew marks on them around the field edges or in the fields.
So what I'm hearing from you then is the key to finding sheds is to have a good pair of shoes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, that's based on your earlier calculations of what I hear you saying.
And patience.
I was thinking that maybe I'm just, I don't know what I'm doing. And but based on your calculations of 8 hours per shed or 9 hours per shed, hell, I ain't doing too bad.
That's funny. Now, a lot of guys say that deer start to lose their antlers when there's a huge change or there is their stress level changes, right? So I talked with a deer farmer and he says that what he does is he'll feed them all winter long. And when he wants their antlers to fall off sometime in February or March, depending on the weather, he says he'll cut off feed for a couple days and it will stress the animals out and all their antlers will fall off. So
really?
Yeah. So that's, I take that, right? And I say, okay, well, we had a huge snowstorm in late January, extremely cold temperatures. The deer were probably stressed. So that tells me if that theory holds true, then there could be a good number of deer that have already shed based off that theory.
If the stressor theory is, if you can put money on that.
Yep.
And definitely they just went through a stressful period last week,
yep,
for sure.
Absolutely. Now check this out. I'm on social media a lot, right? And I start to hear rumors about guys, guys are saying, man, my trail cameras are showing that a lot of the deer have dropped already. And I haven't been able to go and check my trail cameras out, which is one of the reasons why I asked you the question, whether or not you were seeing what you were seeing. Have you heard any rumblings about in the area that your farms are, whether or not deer are shed already?
No, I haven't. I have not heard.
Gotcha.
No, but I was actually going to talk to Amy after this phone call and just see if she wanted to drive around tonight and just glass.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, would not even using trail cameras, just glass and see if we can spot bucks of any age class and see if they're still holding antlers. Yeah. I really haven't been doing any much of that lately.
Right.
It's been cold and we had the snow and stuff. So I've been working on our house and just doing other things that have to get done. So I haven't really been doing a lot in the deer world lately. So,
yeah.
But that's interesting, that whole stressor thing
yeah.
with the cold and snow. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. How much weight do you hold? Let's say you have this 3-year-old, right? And you catch him on trail camera sometime throughout the summer, sometime throughout the fall, and maybe you find one of his shed antlers in one of your food plots, or you find him on a different farm, or your neighbor finds his shed antler. How much weight would you give the location of a shed in relationship to where you might be hunting a buck in the fall?
Boy, this might sound bad, and then maybe it's not the right answer, but if you're asking my opinion, I give it zero weight. I give it zero weight.
Yeah.
Because where they are when they drop their antlers in February or March is just completely, entirely dependent on what kind of food source they have available
yeah.
that time of year. You know, where they had to go to get their food source.
Yeah.
And if you've already been watching that deer, like you said, you've been seeing it, you already know that that deer's in its home range, is in the area where you're running your cameras and you're seeing it. So the only thing it would tell me is if you found that shed antler a mile away and it was a goofy, you know, maybe at a Fort G2 or something where you know it's that buck that you've been watching and it's completely outside of its realm, that might give you some kind of idea that, okay, its home range extends, you know, out toward the east another mile or something, that it gives you a little bit of information you didn't know. So that might help you out.
Yeah.
But if you're finding the shed somewhere where you would normally hunt, I that's my opinion.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a better answer, or somebody has a better way of looking or viewing that shed. Cause I've found many sheds, or the people I've been with have found sheds, and then we've gone on to kill those deer. And I yeah. can't say that we've ever used that information explicitly in yeah. helping us to, you know, to hunt it that following year, other than knowing it's still alive.
Right. Right. And I'll tell you what, I used to think that, right. Because I've never killed a deer until this year. I've never killed a buck that I found the sheds to previous years. Now this year, I found a shed antler. I found the biggest antler I found last year went to the buck that I killed this past season, right? So
okay.
February 28th or 25th, I found a shed antler of a buck I killed this past November. And it was only, I want to say, 150 to 200 yards away from where I shot my buck. So I think that has something to do with their home range, right? Their home, I think they have a core area, and then they have a kind of an extended range. And maybe it's just complete circumstance that it was there at that time. But like I said, last year there was what I would call a beneficial crop rotation. And this year there wasn't. This upcoming year there wasn't. So I'm curious to see what the shed hunting is going to be like this year. And if I can say deer like beans more, like I'm going to find more antlers around bean fields or less antlers around bean fields, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah. So I have some questions for you then. So you found that antler.
Yeah.
And when you found it, where you found it, were you surprised?
No.
I mean, were you, holy cow, I found this shed and I had no idea this deer ever would have been here.
Nope. I found it and I said, I know exactly who this buck is. I had pictures of him all fall around this field. But the previous year on a different, that buck showed up in the summertime and then he was gone. He wasn't anywhere else Now, I don't remember if he was there the year before, because he probably just would have been a real small 8-pointer that all, you know, how many small 8-point, like 115-inch 8-pointers do we have running around? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's hard to define the characteristics, but now he popped this 9th point on his left side, so, and he had a notch. I don't remember if he had a notch in his ear or not, but anyway, he was an easily identifiable buck who was in the area around that field the entire year, and so when I found the antler, I knew exactly who it was, because I had a trail camera taking pictures of him all fall, probably 50 yards away from where I found the shed antler. So I don't know.
So my next follow-up question is, if you knew the deer was there, you have camera pictures of him, how did finding the shed help you kill the deer?
You know, that's a question that I think about a lot, because this year I had 3 trail cameras stolen. Yeah, all along this one little area, and I didn't have any intel in this, you know, like what deer were coming through. The cameras got stolen in October, and early October. And I wanted to put some more trail cameras up when I started my rut vacation, but I didn't want them to get stolen, so I didn't, right? So I hunted a couple other parts of the farm, and nothing was, you know, nothing that was of interest was on this farm. You know, there was a small 4-year-old, and I really wasn't interested in going after him. But I then thought to myself, okay, well, you're not paying attention to this other side of the farm where your trail cameras were stolen. Now, just because my trail cameras were stolen doesn't mean that there wasn't any deer in that area, right? And I said, mm-hmm. Well, you found that shed antler only 200 yards away from this really good pinch point, this really good terrain feature, right? So I said, hell, why not? I go in there one night, I think I sat there. I sat there one night, nothing happened. I went back there after this front moved through, and it was the first and only buck that showed up, and I shot him, right? So I thought about that shed antler only being X amount of yards away, and it was the tipping point for me to go in and set up a tree stand in this area.
Yeah, I can see that. The biggest thing for me when you find a shed, especially if you find a shed of like a 3 or 4 or 5-year-old
yeah.
that you want to hunt or something, it's the motivation.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, human beings are infatuated with antlers, and hunters are infatuated. And me too. You know what I mean? So when you find a shed, you know, let's say you find a 150-inch buck, you know, half shed or full shed or whatever, it's the motivation. You know, okay, now I got the sheds, I have to kill that deer, you know?
Yeah. I completely get it. For me, it was that tipping point, right? It was, if I didn't find that shed, who knows if I would have went to that spot, right?
So that one extra piece of information that
right.
triggered something in your head to think that you should try it.
Right. Absolutely. And so now I'm getting this information about this travel corridor. There's no fence line. It's just like between point A and point B, there has historically been really good deer movement. I catch them on trail cameras. I find sheds here, which allows me to start thinking, maybe I need to focus more tree stand time here, or come up with creative ideas to hunt this area a little bit more. And I don't know. I think this upcoming year this year is what I would call a bean year. This next year will be a corn year for this particular area. And I think that I'm going to be setting up in this area now until the crops come out, to see if these deer are using it the way I think they're using it. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
That's the sport of hunting.
That's right.
That's why we all love it. If it was easy, I don't think we'd be doing it anymore.
Right. And it's almost,
I really don't.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. And for me, it's almost like that shed antler was a piece of the puzzle to solving like this mystery, right? And
yeah.
Maybe I'm a detective at heart and I just don't know it, but I love I love putting the pieces of the puzzle together, whether it's finding, you know, finding a scrape or a rub or a shed antler, or, you know, seeing a buck on trail camera or seeing a buck from my stands and putting it all together to try to, you know, catch this buck or, you know, to get within shooting range of them. And more times than not, I think we fail and we got to start from scratch. But then there's those moments, like for me this year, it all came together and I ended up shooting my biggest buck, right? And it, not my oldest buck, but my biggest scoring buck. And, I don't know, man, it's, I don't know, like the articles that you write, mm-hmm. right? 365, Whitetail 365. Yep. And, I think it's, man, I just love it.
Like I said before, for me, it's every day of the year. And obviously we take breaks. We have to go back to work. We have family stuff. We have to get together, but the shed hunting is one way to transition from, which is almost kind of a downer for many hunters, is the last day of the season.
Right.
Or when your tag is filled, you know, when you can't hunt anymore and you have 5 months, 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, whatever it is before you can do something. You know, if you can't put in food plots and any of that kind of stuff, well, then you don't get to enjoy that part of the hunt. That's why I enjoy all the habitat and the food plots and stuff. So the shed hunting is just one more reason, one more excuse to get out there and enjoy the outdoors and have it be part of your hunt. And don't kid yourself. If you find a shed, you had to have looked back on that hunt and the fact that you probably got that deer mounted or whatever you did with it. And now you have that shed, and 20 years from now, you can tell family members or whatever, the whole story. And it just, it's awesome. That's why we do it.
So check this out, right? I have the skull cap with the antlers in my office here. I have that shed from last year, from the previous year in my office. So I start looking. I was recording a podcast and I can see my shed antler collection. I have two strings of bob wire that I drilled into my wall, and I hang I hang my sheds on that, just kind of for some decoration. And I'm recording a podcast with another guy and I'm looking at my sheds and I see this characteristic kind of stick out. And I finish the podcast, and after I'm done, I go pull this shed off of the wall, and I know where I found it because I can tell you where I found every one of my sheds, and I found it in the same cornfield, right? And I'm like, no way. So I lay it down on the floor next to the shed that I found this past year. And then I'm looking through all the antlers that I found off this one specific cornfield or this one specific ag field, and I find another one. So I've been looking at these shed antlers. They all have the same characteristics. They're all from the same cornfield. And I think I have 3 years of shed antlers. And I think so. 5, 4, 3, 2. So 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, and I killed them as a 5-year-old. So 3 years of sheds, and I killed the buck all from the same buck.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Right? But you didn't even know it until this year, until you killed it and started going back and looking.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something.
Yeah. And that's just the story, right? And that's what I love about it, is being able to connect the pieces and tell the story.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, shed hunting is coming up, and I'm going to get hot and heavy with that. But March also brings time when a lot of people are starting to think about habitat work and starting to think about food plots and what they're going to do. And I say that we need to get you back on the podcast sometime in March, and we'll start talking about that stuff. What do you think?
I would love to. That's my passion. My passion is habitat for white-tailed deer. And I'll be the first to admit that maybe I'm not the professional at it or the best guy at it, but I sure do try, and that's definitely where my passion is. So looking forward to that podcast. That'd be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to that.
Well, until then, why don't you put some miles on those boots and try to find some shed antlers, and we'll talk to you in March.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Have a good one.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Another Iowa Sportsman podcast in the books. Thank you to Mr. Tom Pepelinski for taking time out of his day to come on and chat with us about whitetails and his passion for whitetails. If you want to read a lot of awesome articles that he puts out, specifically the Whitetail 365 articles that he writes for the Iowa Sportsman magazine, go visit iowasportsman.com and subscribe to the magazine. It's pretty simple. I think he also does some articles online as well, but iowasportsman.com, and there you can sign up, get your subscription to the magazine, the Iowa Sportsman magazine. A lot of great content there as well. I think that's it. Hopefully everybody enjoyed this podcast. If you do enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you download your podcast, and check us out on social media. Facebook is where a majority of the Iowa Sportsman content comes through as far as social media is concerned. But I know they're in the process of starting an Instagram page as well, so keep an eye out for that. So until next time, why don't you guys start putting the miles on the boots and start looking for sheds? We'll see you next week.